Welcome to the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast with your hosts, Chip Patterson and Barton Simmons. The ultimate insider's guide from signing day to the national championship game and everything in between. CBS Sports presents the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast.
Back here on the 24/7 Sports Podcast, Chip Patterson here, Barton Simmons there. This was an unexpected twist and turn. We were sitting around. It was Thursday. A few people maybe had an inkling, but sure enough, news breaks that our Hugh Freeze's job may be in jeopardy. Then it quickly turns into resigning. And then finally, on Thursday in Oxford, a press conference was held, and this was Chancellor Vitter speaking to reporters.
While Coach Freeze served our university well in many regards during his tenure, we simply cannot accept the conduct in his personal life that we have discovered. As you will soon learn, this matter is totally unrelated to the NCAA case. And our position on the facts documented in our response remains the same.
Hugh Freeze out. Barton, a lot to get to here, right?
Yo, this is not good on any level for Ole Miss. I mean, this is – so they absolutely went to war to protect Hugh Freeze. In all this NCAA stuff, they were going to do whatever they could, throw anybody under the bus, and make sure that their head coach was safe. And so this is obviously the worst possible outcome, because now Ole Miss is firing Hugh Freeze, effectively. He's resigning, but they're firing Hugh Freeze.
No buyout.
But no buyout, and they still have to defend his actions to the NCAA. Like, they still have to present Hugh Freeze and prop him up as a coach that was working conscientiously within the rules of the NCAA to defend the stance they've taken throughout this NCAA investigation. So, you know, they're losing their coach, but if they had just thrown him under the bus back in the spring or winter, then they would have lost him anyways, and they wouldn't, and the NCAA would have come down a little bit more leniently on them. Now they don't get the reprieve from the NCAA, and they lose their coach. So it's just a messy situation for Ole Miss, and goodness gracious, Hugh Freeze, brother. I mean, this is for Hugh Freeze coming out of this. I can't imagine a coach looking worse.
Right.
For all the rhetoric that he's put out there, all the religious, self-righteous talk, this is the way you're going to go out, coach?
No.
I mean, this is just, I mean, the intentional nature of the conduct here is as hypocritical as I mean, anything you can imagine. This is pretty ugly.
This is, there is something, I don't want to call it poetry. Like, I don't want to revel in it, but the twists in this are incredible, because Ole Miss asserts that this improper conduct, this pattern of misconduct, which was revealed through combing through cell phone records, is not tied to the NCAA or potential NCAA violations. No, this is a personal matter, and it was discovered because Hugh Freeze was trying to pin the blame for the NCAA on Houston Nutt and on the previous regime. And this was something that started very, very early. Houston Nutt alleges in a defamation lawsuit that Hugh Freeze and athletic director Ross Bjork had been reaching out to local media outlets. And this is where it gets really interesting, particularly from my seat, Barton, because one of our jobs at CBS Sports is we rely very heavily on the local reporting. You know, like, we really need those local reporters to help us be able to understand and frame the message. And I distinctly remember when the NCAA allegations, and when the notice of allegations came out, I was surprised at how much of it was on Hugh Freeze and his staff, because the local reporters had framed this in a way where, I don't know how much of this is on Hugh Freeze. We think some of this might not be a football issue, or at least not necessarily on this particular team. And so Houston Nutt, who is a commentator, who really has a lot of time and not real happy about the fact that his name is being dragged through the mud right now by Hugh Freeze, hires an attorney. They start going through the phone records. Houston Nutt was just looking for evidence that he had been calling reporters, and it looks like he and then Ole Miss Athletic Director Ross Bjork later found something else in terms of a pattern of phone calls on this 39,000 call list. Which tells me, all right, so we've got the report from USA Today and Yahoo Sports about the call to the escort service. It was one in Tampa. Hugh Freeze has told his supervisors, and he told Pat Forty it was a misdial. He was in a 313 area code, 813, whatever. But the whatever else they discovered, looks bad.
I mean, yeah, Ross Bjork, I think they said there was a serious pattern of concerning behavior or something like that. I mean, it was not understated the way they presented what they found in the rest of their phone records. So while we're still, you know, waiting for that to trickle out, what exactly, you know, was in the rest of his phone records, it's bad for them to go ahead and just fire him. And a couple of things on, you know, your initial sort of breakdown of how this played out. So I look at a lot of this from a recruiting standpoint, and when the first initial findings came out, where we didn't actually know the findings, but we knew that the NCAA had delivered a notice of allegations to Ole Miss, and that notice of allegations wasn't public, so we had to rely on sources in terms of what it looked like, and obviously I felt like, as most people did, this is going to take a serious hit on recruiting. But then you start hearing from the local media, as you mentioned, Chip, and they're saying it's not as bad as you think. This is primarily the Houston Nutt regime,
yeah,
and track and women's basketball and whatever else. And so a couple things there. A, that's effectively lying to the recruits that are coming on campus, the class of 2016 that they're trying to save. You know, that's misleading those guys into stepping into a situation that is going to be significantly larger than they signed up for. A, B, the thing about that I think is of note is that was all done with, you know, the complicity of Ross Bjork. I mean, he saw those reports coming out. He knew that they were misleading the media and seemed to be okay with it at that point. So in that sense, Ross Bjork comes out of this thing not looking very good as the athletic director, because not only did he have a bad read on Hugh Freeze, but he really allowed them to mislead recruits and mislead the press in terms of how this would look long term. And, you know, with that said, this is Hugh Freeze now now I lost my train of thought.
So there's always been dirty recruiting or whatever, but this was done to save a recruiting class. Like, these lies that ended up undoing Hugh Freeze were little white lies that were told to try and save a recruiting class.
Well, and here's the other thing I wanted to point out is this: Houston Nutt rightly wanted an apology. That's really all he wanted. He didn't want money. He just wanted an apology to clear his name, because he was drug through the mud so much when the initial notice of allegations came out. All they had to do was apologize to Hugh Freeze publicly, and he would never have filed this lawsuit, and they would have never found the calls, and Hugh Freeze would still have a job.
Oh, my goodness.
But they didn't. They were too proud to do that. They refused to apologize to Houston Nutt, and then that's when this ball of yarn started to unspool. And so, you know, you look at the end of the day, and it's just it's the hypocrisy of the Hugh Freeze stuff is maddening, because bad is bad and wrong is wrong. And if he had any sort of extramarital affair, that's all wrong. But this isn't like he fell in love with a trainer or something. This is one like he, you know, had too many beers after signing day one night and stumbled into something. He was calling escort services while he is heavy-handedly delivering the most, you know, forward-facing religious rhetoric of any coach in college football right now. So for him to knowingly do that and knowingly put on that front is really just, I think, offensive to everybody. I mean, look, Bobby Petrino is a jerk and he owns it.
Yeah.
And I was never offended by what he did off the field. But for Hugh Freeze, he throws it in everyone's face what a good person he is. So, you know, give us give an effort to live up to what you're putting out there. And so, that's why I think everyone is a lot of people are sort of taking, taking some joy in this. And I think that Hugh Freeze is not getting an easy way out by anybody because of all that.
Oh, there are a lot of college football coaches across the country that didn't do the Jen Bielema tweet karma, but I'm sure that they were like, huh, well, looky that. Not as goody two shoes as you thought, huh?
It was rumored. Like I had heard the just sort of, and more recently, just because everyone was piling on, but I had heard the sort of Hugh's not quite as saintly as he makes himself out to be, and you know, I hear this and that and the other, and it was just rumors. And so, so in that sense, I wasn't shocked to see the news, but I was shocked to see it become public, I guess. You know, that was to me the fact that it came out and the timing that it came out with, and the fact that it was bad enough that Ole Miss had to turn their back on all that defense they've mounted for Hugh Freeze was, I thought, pretty shocking.
All right. So, Matt Luke, interim coach, he will be the immediate future. I mean, you talk about timing, like camp's about to start. You got Shea Patterson, like one of the top quarterback talents in the SEC right there. Like you still got a lot of football that we got to worry about. Matt Luke, former Ole Miss player, takes over as the interim coach. What's the, like, can this Ole Miss football program move forward? They're still going to have to worry about the NCAA. They still have no postseason for this particular season. What do you see for the Rebels moving forward? Like, is this going to be a situation? Like, I kind of feel like we are not going to see another 9 or 10 win season from Ole Miss football for a while.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't remember what I gave as my over or under for our SEC talk. I was pretty bullish on Ole Miss though heading into the season.
You had him at like six. Like I think that you saw like a 6-6 type season, like maybe with a good win somewhere in there with them all rallying together at the end of the season.
Yeah, that sounds right. And I mean, I still think that they're probably capable of really, you know, delivering a really strong performance against a good team here or there. But to me, this takes a hit on their win total because this kind of leaves them scrambling. At least they had the family was together. You know, they were, the wagons were circled and Hugh Freeze, for all his other faults, is a good coach. And, you know, I really felt like this offense was so good that they were going to find a way to win some games. And I still think they will look good, but man, I think that this is the type of thing that can send them reeling a little bit. Now here's the positive is Matt Luke is somebody that through all this Ole Miss mess from off the field to recruiting to whatever else, he's come out of this somehow still clean. I mean, he still has a really strong reputation. He's a good coach. He's a good offensive line coach. He's a good recruiter. He is, I think he's the right guy to have as the interim coach. And frankly, if they somehow manage to get to 7 or 8 wins this year, which is not outlandish, I think he's got a real chance to keep this job despite being part of the administration that brought this program down. I think he's clean enough and has come out with his hands clean enough that he and his reputation is good enough that I really think he's got a shot to win this full-time job, especially because it's not going to have a bunch of other big names banging down the door. So, this is going to be a really interesting year, and I think it's a great opportunity for Matt Luke.
And I've seen so many So many people chasing that bag of clicks. So many click baggers just trying to get out there, throwing out a name like a Lane Kiffin, throwing out a name like a Les Miles, throwing out Chip Kelly. Like I've seen a lot of people who I do not rely on for college football opinions from within coaching circles, where it seems like they had one conversation with one agent and they're just trying to fire off the most salacious thing that they can. And it's just, man, I am not the insider, Barton, but man, I know this hustle and I know this industry. And if it's not Matt Luke, this looks to me like a job for a group of five coach that wants to take on a really challenging opportunity, you know?
Well, yeah, and there's, I also think anyone that's throwing out legitimate lists right now is guessing, because Ole Miss, no one's going to take that job until they know what the sanctions are. So no one is ready to jump on board right now. Ole Miss is going to take their time with this because they're going to have to sit through this interim period anyways. And so I think that there's a lot of feeling out on both sides before we have a realistic list. But I agree with you. Like, first of all, Lane Kiffin, I saw that too. That's ridiculous. Like,
well,
absurd.
Did you see what my man did on Twitter?
No. Oh, Lane, yeah, following all the Ole Miss folks.
Yes.
I mean, he is the ultimate Twitter troll, and for that, Lane, I love you.
I love you. Awesome. Yes.
But I mean, look, Lane Kiffin right now, his brother Chris Kiffin is on staff with him right now. Chris Kiffin he will have a show cause on him more than likely, and FAU may be the only school that would hire him right now. So I mean, there's a lot of complications there that Lane Kiffin doesn't make sense with. And so to me, there's a couple names that really I think make sense. One is Frank Wilson, who's a UTSA. He's doing a great job there. They're recruiting at an incredibly high level.
Was that LSU running backs coach?
Former LSU running backs coach and recruiting coordinator, yeah. And he was at Ole Miss before. He was at Ole Miss under Ed Orgeron. And so he's got some background there, some history there. He understands the landscape. He would be able to recruit there despite what's going on because he's that good of a recruiter. And I think that given his history there, that would be a job he would consider. And I think that Frank Wilson kind of gets the rap of a recruiter. And sometimes that can be, have almost a negative connotation to it. But that's not like Frank Wilson there. He's a stand-up guy. He recruits the right way.
How many games did the Roadrunners win last year? Six or seven, right?
I think they went 6-6 or 6-7 or something like that. Yeah. So, I mean, they're a well-coached team, and so I think he's a name that's realistic to keep an eye on. Another name, and you threw him out there, but as sort of possibly a dream or whatever you want to call it, but I think Les Miles may actually be realistic.
Oh, really?
I mean, so Dan Wolkin tweeted that he heard that Les Miles had serious interest. I think Dan talks to people. I think that's and I could it makes some sense to me. Like, Les
wants to work. Les really wants to work.
And he's I think that Les would embrace playing in the SEC West and having a chance to play LSU. I think he would, I think he's the kind of coach that, they're going to have a rough go of it here during these sanctions regardless. And so in some ways they need somebody who can ground them, keep, stabilize the program. And maybe even someone that isn't the long-term answer, but just a short-term answer to really get them through the weeds here. And Les Miles could be that. Now, here's to me, Les Miles is Houston nuts. I think he's the same sort of head coach in terms of the style, the approach, the where they're at in their careers, And so in some ways, I don't think that Les Miles necessarily would be a great hire, but I don't think he's an unrealistic hire. So I think he's one to keep an eye on. And then the two, I'll give you three more names. Neil Brown and Willie Fritz, I think, fit that sort of Southern group of five profile where they've had success. I think they would look for that. This would be a step up for them that they would take. And I think they're good coaches. And then Chip, here's my final one. And this is, I have no sources. I have no reason to think he's being considered, but to me, if I'm Ole Miss, he's one of my first calls, is Joe Maglia at Coastal Carolina. I don't know if you're familiar with my man.
Familiar. As somebody who has a very soft spot in my heart for Myrtle Beach and the General Conway, South Carolina area, I've always had my eye on Coastal Carolina. I love their basketball program. They're always in the NCAA tournament. And when I started hearing about this TD Ameritrade CEO that was lighting up the world, the college football world, oh, I've been on this, bro. I would love this. He's old, though, right?
Yeah, but again, I think what Ole Miss needs is someone that is a CEO, is someone that can really formalize the program and put some structures in place that set it up for long-term success, can stabilize it through what's about to be a tumultuous couple of years. And Joe Maglia they've won at Coastal Carolina. He's a good coach, too, and he is old, but he's been successful in everything he's ever done. Why, if you're Ole Miss, not just hire someone that's going to just stabilize you, just get you on solid footing once again, and then, hey, in 5 years, maybe you're looking for another coach, but you're looking for a coach after being a program that's found some success and found a grounding force. And so I just think that would be a really interesting name, given just the way his career has gone, as successful as he's been throughout and everything he's done. I would be fascinated to see him in Oxford.
We had on our last episode Tim Tebow on the show, and we talked in our conversations during the episode about the lack of Florida quarterback success since Tim Tebow. And boy, I don't know what kind of juju we sent into the universe, Barton, but Florida got some great quarterback news over the weekend with the commitment of Matt Corral. Now, here's what I'm going to let you give me your analysis, because obviously you know this player much better than I do and better than anybody else that is in the college football world or could be listening to this podcast. But I see a Long Beach Poly prospect who is committed to USC, decommitted from USC. And when you look at him on the numbers, he is probably the highest rated quarterback for Florida to commit since Jeff Driskel. What do you see from Matt Corral, and what kind of get was this for the Gators? Because I understand Florida fans have been thirsty, but I could tell that this was some pretty big news on the recruiting trail, particularly for that position moving forward.
Yeah, this is not small. This is a big get, because Matt Corral is one of the, from a talent perspective, he's one of the best in this class. And, at the quarterback position, talent is just the starting point. You never know what you're going to get from the neck up once they get on campus. But this kid he can sling it now. And he is, out of the opening finals, they had a long ball toss, and Matt Corral had the longest throw in the country or in the event with a 78-yard throw. I mean, so that gives you an idea what kind of a cannon is on this guy's arm. He's coming all the way from California. You mentioned that he decommitted from USC. That was a little bit of a mutual parting of ways. So he doesn't come with zero baggage. I mean, he's had a couple off the field issues. He transferred schools. He actually got in a fight with Wayne Gretzky's son. It was part of the reason he transferred out of Oaks Christian, was where he was last year. And so the USC thing fell apart on him. And he actually has been looking Southeastern Conference, and Georgia was considered a favorite, and now he's committed to Florida. And in some ways, this is also interesting, because Florida had put all their chips in on Justin Fields for a while now, and the number one player in the country. And so now that they have Matt Corral, you assume Justin Fields probably, that takes Florida out of the race for him. But if you're Florida, this is a bird in the hand situation. You take the opportunity here, and it's a great one. I mean, this is a kid that if Jim McElwain coaches him up, I mean, this is a kid that's talented enough to absolutely get Florida heading in the right direction in the passing game. And so it's big. And I tell you, another one that just popped, we're talking on Monday morning, just popped yesterday at Sunday, Jamar Chase, to me, one of the best receivers in this class, also committed over the weekend to Florida. And this is the kid, just to refresh people's memories of those that follow recruiting, he was going to announce at the opening on NFL Network, on live television. They screwed up the announcements. They pushed it back. He wasn't able to announce that day. He would have announced to TCU that day. But because the NFL Network screwed it up, he decided to sit back, wait, reassess. He goes down to Florida for the Friday Night Lights event, and he gets blown away. So that's a tough blow for TCU because this kid is one of the best receivers in the country, and now he's going to be teaming up with one of the best quarterbacks in the country, Matt Corral. So Florida, big, big weekend on the recruiting trail.
So, all right, Friday Night Lights at Florida. This was – do most programs have events like this? I was texting you over the weekend because I was on weekend duty while I was also on U.S. Open duty. I don't know. I was around my computer too much. I was learning about. I was finding out more and more. And clearly, the Friday Night Lights weekend, like there was celebration to even get Justin Fields to Friday Night Lights, and then it also leads, I think, to the Matt Corral commitment. Then you get Jamar Chase, like. What is it about these events that has become in vogue? Because I have also seen throughout the summertime and throughout the off season these popping up. Like it almost seems like you're hyping up what has always been just the classic like junior and senior camps, right?
Yeah, you make a sort of a showcase camp. You put them under the lights in the indoor facility. It's an evening event. They try to make it more exclusive. They try to make it more invite only. And it's really an opportunity for these guys to get around the program and the coaches and just get loved up a little bit. And it's fun to see it work. Like in Mississippi State, they're I think it's called their Big Dog Camp. They'll have almost their whole team out there just like cheering on the commits, and it's a cool setting. Down in Miami, their Paradise Camp.
Yeah,
they had a bunch of former players, like a bunch of like NFL guys, Michael Irvin and Ed Reed type guys down there. Really just sort of hanging out with the players. And it's a great, I mean, talk about, that's a heck of an impression there. If you're getting to hang out with all the Miami greats, Urban Meyer got it going at Florida Friday Night Lights. That was sort of the first one of his kind. And now everybody's doing it. And it really becomes sort of the finishing touch of the summer recruiting season. And so we see a few of these big commits pop. They get caught up in the emotion and the moment, and they want to be a part of the team, and that's what Florida was able to capitalize on this weekend. And I mean, it is truly one of the real indicators of who's going to have success through the years is, you know, what can they get done on their elite weekends.
Ooh, very, very cool. All right, as we continue to tear through our win totals, we're going to split the Big Ten up into two because I'm excited, Barton, because now here on the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast, we've got like news and things to react to instantly. So we're going to be able to hit that as well as continuing to plow through these win totals. Our task for today is the Big Ten West. Big Ten Media Days will be going on this week, so it should be very timely. We'll knock out the Big Ten East, which of course is Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan State et al. In our next episode. But we want to start in the Big Ten West. It is, you know, every division, every conference has the division where it always seems like teams are just beating each other up to try and get to that championship game. This is the Big Ten's version of the SEC East or the ACC Coastal. The Big Ten West starts with a team that I believe you tipped your hand on in a previous episode. We're going to start with Wisconsin with a number at 9.5. Is this a team? I'm just pulling this right off the top of my head, Barton. But didn't you say you're feeling Paul Chryst's squad this year?
Yeah, I am. I think that this is, and I think I mentioned it in another episode when we were talking Big 12. I thought this is a team. I think you can throw in the Washington category as a college football playoff contender that maybe people aren't talking about. Yes. And I think that Wisconsin is. I mean, they were 11-3 last year. They returned 15 starters. They returned their whole offensive line. And when your offensive line is back at Wisconsin, that means something, because that's what they are. They're an offensive line factory. Paul Chryst is one of the best coaches in the country. Alex Hornibrook's going to be improved. You know, I love Troy Fumagalli, the tight end. I think he's one of the best in the country. I just think, and obviously, and I think their defense is always going to be so good. And then you look at their schedule. So, you know, last year they had what? They had like LSU. They had, you know, they had Ohio State and Michigan. This year they've got Michigan again, but the rest of it is just, you know, it's the West teams plus Utah State, Florida Atlantic, BYU.
Win.
The schedule sets up. Well. Like the schedule, it's they're going to be, I mean, the over is the play, first of all. And to me, it's just a matter of whether or not they're undefeated by the time, you know, they play Michigan late in the year, undefeated by the time they play in the Big Ten championship game. Because here's what I could envision. I'm going to toy with doing this. I mean, I don't know who I'm going to pick for my Final Four yet or my Playoff Four. But I could envision a scenario where Wisconsin runs the table, goes to the Big Ten championship game, loses to, say, Ohio State in a really close game, and then the Big Ten gets two with Wisconsin and Ohio State.
Ooh, I like it.
So this is going to be a fun team. I really – Quintez Cephas is a kid that I'm excited to see. The guy that didn't start playing football till late was a Furman commit and in basketball, and Wisconsin sort of threw an offer out there at his senior year after he started blowing it up, and like he's already looks like he's going to be a starter. That defense, as I mentioned, I mean, those guys are loaded, and then the offensive line is going to carry them. I just like this team. You know, it's just a Paul Chryst team with a Wisconsin identity, and I just think they're going to be really good.
Thick dudes with beer and cheese just to bowl over defensive lines and give them just as much time as you need. I am so with you here. I think that Wisconsin is by far and away. Like, I think that I always view college football nationally and within conferences. I always end up viewing them in tiers, and I think Wisconsin is alone in the Big Ten West, and I think that Wisconsin is the only team that is on the top tier with Ohio State and Penn State in the Big Ten total. I mean, this is an easy over for me at 10. I'm not ready to go 12-0. I think that there might be a weird loss in there somewhere, but I'm absolutely with you on the over here. This is so much fun, and now I'm just sitting here daydreaming about the screaming that's going to happen if the first conference to get two teams in the college football playoff is the Big Ten. I mean, goodness gracious, that would be so much fun.
But, you know, they've got the beef up top. So the only thing that limits Wisconsin in that is that off, you know, that non-conference schedule, you know, because they don't really have a, you know, the NCAA does reward, or I'm sorry, the committee does reward scheduling, and Wisconsin's Utah State, Florida Atlantic, BYU isn't exactly the most treacherous stretch there. So I don't know, we'll see, but I think that puts them in a position and they'll have a resume building game late in the season against Michigan that they can probably hang their hat on. I think it'll be interesting.
Hey, Barry Alvarez might recuse himself, but you can't tell me he's not going to be slipping extra game control statistics to his colleagues on the selection committee if Wisconsin's in the mix.
And you know that guy's just like giving like a stare to some folks, just some intimidating, like water cooler conversations. Just, hey, listen. Take care of my Badgers.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, yeah. He starts icing somebody out just because he knows that they're not putting them high enough on their ballot.
Yeah.
All right. An interesting team here, Northwestern. Over-under set at 8 right now. Juiced a little bit to the over, according to the latest Bovada numbers. The Northwestern has fallen into a pattern, which for Northwestern football under Pat Fitzgerald, I think can be viewed as a good thing, but it's one where I'm assuming that they're going to be able to win 6 or 7 games pretty much every single season. And I like that is a great thing. I don't think Clayton Thorson has a bunch of arm talent, but the boy's been able to get out there and lead his team to some wins. Where are you at with the Wildcats right now, both for the season and in general? Like, this is a program that's established some stability over the last couple years.
Oh, man, you're on my boy Clayton Thorson. Look, that's where you're wrong, Chip.
You like Clayton Thorson?
He does have arm talent. Oh. Clayton Thorson is an NFL quarterback.
What?
Not only that, but I'm going to tell you right now, Clayton Thorson has a chance to be like a first-round NFL quarterback.
What?
I'm telling you, watch him this year. Just
Hold on. Let me mark the tape. 34-50 is when Barton told Chip that Clayton Thorson has NFL talent, and not only that, but could be a first-round pick.
I'm telling you what now. It's one of those deals where it's almost Drew Lock-ish. I talked about Drew Lock in the SEC thing where he, you know, freshman year got thrown into the fire. He wasn't very good. Sophomore year, he made big strides. We'll see what he looks like if he can continue that progression as a junior. That's what Clayton Thorson, he played as a freshman, I guess a redshirt freshman is when he started playing.
Throwing balls into the ground. Throwing hitch routes into the ground.
Wasn't pretty, but he's big, he's strong, he's athletic. He does have a big arm. He's effortless as a thrower. He got a lot better last year, and I think he's going to continue to progress. They love him in that program. They think, you know, he has all the intangibles, he's a hardworking kid, great family, all that stuff. He's going to be an NFL quarterback. And I actually think that he is a big reason why I think Northwestern is a lock to hit the over.
Wow.
And I think that they're going to be – this is going to be the – you know, look, they had 10 wins in 2015. They had 10 wins in 2012. They're going to have a chance at a 10-win season this year. I think that they – you know, obviously this is another team. They should run through their non-conference, Nevada, Duke, Bowling Green. Wisconsin, you know, that's an away game. I think that that's a tough game to win. They'll have Penn State at home. I think that's a dangerous game for Penn State. And then the rest of their schedule, Maryland, Iowa, Michigan State, Nebraska, Purdue, Minnesota, Illinois. I mean, it's all the West teams. And I mean, they should be favored in all those games, I think. And I just think this is a really well-coached football team. They've got a really good defense. Their secondary is outstanding. They've got a running back in Justin Jackson, who's one of the workhorse backs in college
football. Yeah, Justin
Jackson's
really good. I like him.
And not only that, but they lose Austin Carr, who was their leading receiver last year, but they get Jaylen Brown in, who's a transfer from Oregon, who's a very talented kid, who could I think, make that a pretty seamless transition from Austin Carr. I really like Northwestern. I think this is a team that's going to have a really, really good year.
All right. Over for Barton. I'm going to go push at 8-4 because I'm a little bit more excited about some of the other teams down the list. Minnesota. We got PJ Fleck. We are rowing the boat. 7.5 wins right here for the Golden Gophers. It's going to take some time for him to really be able to put his stamp on things. Minnesota, just in general, that job, that program, they've been going through a lot here in the last couple of years. Where, like, for 7.5, that is taking into consideration that you still have a lot of pieces there and that PJ Fleck's probably a good coach. I'm kind of thinking 7-5. It's 7.5 for the over-under. I'm feeling 7-5 from the Golden Gophers. What about you? So
yeah,
going under.
I think that's fair. Yeah, I think I don't think that's a bad spot for them. You know, that gives them, in five losses, that gives them, what, Northwestern, Wisconsin, Michigan, and a couple more in there somewhere with the, you know, I could see them going over that, certainly. But I think 7-5 is not a bad place. New staff, though. I mean, the thing about PJ Fleck is everyone gets caught up in his slogans, row the boat, and you know, be elite, and all these things that he just, you know, he's a diamond. he is the ultimate cliche slogan guy, and that in some ways I think overshadows his resume as just a really good football coach. Like, he's not just a smoke and mirrors recruiter. His teams are well coached. They don't make mistakes. They're detail oriented. And so, you know, how long does it take to install that into this team? He doesn't pick up a roster that's in a bad situation. I mean, they had a good team last year. So, you know, I don't know. It could be this could be a team that surprises some people too. They have two really good backs, Shannon Brooks and Rodney Smith. They've got, I think Steven Richardson is one of the best defensive linemen in the Big Ten. I really like him. You know, they bring back most of their offensive line. I just think that this is a team that's got a chance to. I mean, look, I'm sort of talking myself into this. I think it's. I'm going to go ahead and say 8-4 too. I think I'll take the over on that one. I think that this is going to be. It's hard for me to see this team taking a step back because I think they're just as talented as last year's team, and I think that this is going to be a really well coached team. Dimery Croft's a really unique quarterback. He's tall. He's athletic. He's a little bit raw. So we'll see how he develops. That's probably going to be what determines this. Is just sort of what does Dimery Croft look like. You know, we'll see. I think 7 to 8 wins is where you're at. I'll lean 8 right now.
All right. We would talk about teams often that might be, you know, better or might be very good teams, but then it's not always going to be reflected in the win total. 6.5 is the number for the Iowa Hawkeyes, and they've got a tough schedule. They've got some of their toughest games at home. Penn State will be coming to town. Ohio State will be coming to town, but they're on the road at Wisconsin. They're on the road at Nebraska. They're on the road at Northwestern. This is a group that is solid on the defensive line and at linebacker, but they do have some turnover coming. 8-5 a year ago, I'm thinking that for 6.5, I really like a Kirk Ferentz team when they've got a pretty good running back and they're pretty nasty and salty in the lines. I'm going to go over here. I think Iowa goes 7-5 and might be a good team, but the schedule ends up hurting them and keeps them from 8 wins.
It's going to be an ugly 7 wins. They're going to grind it out. It's going to be nasty, but it's going to be Iowa football. I agree with you. I wanted to go under. But, I mean, they return so much talent on defense. You know, they've got a really good linebacking core. Manny Rugamba at cornerback on the back end really had a good freshman season last year. He flashed a lot to me. And offensively, they return most of their offensive line. And you mentioned that running back position. Akram Wadley is to me, one of the more underappreciated running backs in the country. He's really good. Now, I'll say this. I watched their spring game, and it was not pretty offensively. It was the most boring spring game I've seen this year. And I actually believe in Brian Ferentz, and I think he's a really sharp coach, and I think he's going to be a head football coach someday. And so I think there is an element of them keeping it very simple in that setting. Not that they're going to overthink it once the games start in earnest here this fall, but I will be very interested to see what that offense looks like. And I think the quarterback position is pretty unproven right now. Nathan Stanley looks like the starter. But again, it wouldn't shock me if they go under. But it's hard to pick against an Iowa team with a good offensive line, a good defense, and a good running back because they just figure out ways to win. So I'm what, 3-for-3 or 4-for-4 with the over so far in this conference, but I just can't bring myself to pick against Iowa in this under.
I loved the Nebraska start to the season a year ago, but I do not love Nebraska going into 2017. The over-under is set at 7. And as I look at the schedule, I feel like I can get to 7-5. You know, I feel like I can look at it and find a couple spots where they might be able to make some noise. But, man, that, like, at Oregon, like, that Coach Taggart's going to have the Ducks ready to go. That is a showcase game for him in Autzen Stadium. You've got Ohio State rotating in there, and I don't know if Ohio State's going to lose a Big Ten game or even a regular season game. They've got to go to Penn State. Now, we were just talking about that Iowa team right there. I tend to think that even though I like Nebraska's secondary, but man, they were relying on Tommy Armstrong a lot. And when he got hurt, things obviously got a little bit difficult. I mean, this was a very good team, and I think Mike Riley is a very good coach. But we got to find some unders here. And I think the Cornhuskers, that's going to be one of the spots. I don't know if Tanner Lee's the guy. I don't know if he's going to be the guy that's going to lead them back up into like the top 10 of the polls in the playoff rankings.
6-6. I'm with you. I think this is a 6-6 team. And I do think that Mike Riley's a good coach. And I think that this is, and so they could overachieve for sure. But I just think, as you mentioned, and when you look at this conference, and I think Oregon's going to be a totally different team. They've got Wisconsin, Ohio State, Northwestern, at Minnesota, at Penn State. All teams I just said I think are really good. And then, you got that Iowa game at the end of the year to get to a bowl if you lose all those other games. So I agree with you. I think that this, this defense under Bob Diaco will be...
Oh, that's right. He's there. Yeah, well, go ahead. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt
you.
I
think I'm getting at what you were about to say. They'll be solid defensively. I think they'll be a good team defensively. I think on offense, this is going to look a little bit more pro stylish with Tanner Lee at quarterback. I think they've got a solid group of skill guys. But again, it's just if I like the other teams. Basically, I like the other teams in this division better.
Mm-hmm.
The teams we just talked about, I just like them better than Nebraska. Nebraska's going to scare some people. They're going to win some tough games. But I don't think this is the year that we see the foundation that Mike Riley's laid sort of play out. I think that that's more of a next year thing because they've been recruiting well too. I think some of that will come to roost here before too long. But I just don't see this being the year.
Illinois' over-under is set at 3.5. Life's hard for Lovie Smith, man. This is a roster where I'm not seeing a lot to like. And this is a schedule where the wins are hard to come by at 3.5, man. It always gets awkward when we get down to the end of these divisions, but man, I'm kind of thinking that this is a 3-9 season for the Fighting Illini.
Hey, Chip, when we did our coach rankings for the Power 5, what range did you have Lovie Smith in?
Like 45 to 55?
He's a tough one to rank because he was really successful in the NFL.
Right.
And in some ways, he shouldn't have even been fired from the Bucs. And then he takes the Illinois job, and you got a Super Bowl coach at Illinois. But yet... Here we are, and he's in will be season two.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree. There's no real reason for confidence right now. And I don't really know what to make of that. And I don't know whether it means just that, he's not necessarily a college fit or, whether we just need to rethink whether or not just hiring an NFL coach is who's got a big name is a good hire. But, this will be a year when they need to make strides to prove that he was the right hire and that he can get it done. I don't necessarily see it either. Dwayne Lawson, who's the quarterback, more than likely is a guy that I think probably would be the starter at Virginia Tech this year had he not gotten in some trouble and stuck around at Virginia Tech. But he transferred out and went JUCO, and now he's at Illinois. So he's really talented. Mike Dudek is back.
Mikey Dudek, healthy, finally.
they've got some players, but again, I'm with you. Look, I think Western Kentucky is a tough game. At USF is a tough game. And then they got all the rest of the Big Ten who they're looking up at. What's our number 3.5? I think there's another 3-9 season.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. And to the point about Lovie Smith and hiring NFL coaches, when we do our Power 5 coaching rankings, we were tasked with ranking them as college football coaches. I took your legacy and your past into consideration, but like that was a boost for Gary Patterson. That was a boost for coaches that have gotten it done at a high level in college over time. That was a boost for Jim Harbaugh when I was considering what he built and was able to do at Stanford. That's like you got the Bears to the Super Bowl, but that means you're good at coaching up grown men. It's a very different challenge when it comes to recruiting and coaching up 18 to 22-year-olds. Lovie Smith's a big name. I wish him, you know, nothing but the best professionally. But man, this is going to be a tough season for Illinois for sure.
Well, and the next team we're good. Like, so for instance, Lovie Smith, splash hire, you know, sounded great at the time, but who would you fire your coach to hire Lovie Smith over? And look, like the next school, Purdue,
Jeff
in
Brohm.
Some ways, I mean, Jeff Brohm is one, despite being, you know, coming from totally different backgrounds, I would, in college football, I'd probably rather have Jeff Brohm than
absolutely.
Lovie Smith.
Yeah, dude, what he did at Western Kentucky was awesome. All right, so Purdue, over-under set at 2.5 right now. I think that it's fair to say, judging from your tone, that you and I are both optimistic about Brohm's long-term potential, but the short-term is going to be tough.
Yeah, I think it will. And this is, I mean, he's got a couple tough non-conference. He's playing at Missouri. He's playing Louisville. And again, you got the rest of the conference to look up at. So this feels like another 2-win season. I think it's a lot of points, and I think the offense starts clicking. And you know what? Maybe they do pull an upset on somebody. And I tell you what, I see Ohio on the schedule. I see Illinois on the schedule. I see Rutgers on the schedule. So now all of a sudden I think, hey, what's – I think I just said Jeff Brohm's a good coach. I got to think they can figure out a way to get to 3 wins.
Yeah.
I do think that David Blaw or Blow or however you say – how do you say his name?
Blaw.
I think David Blaw is not as good of a quarterback as the one he just left at Western Kentucky, Mike White. And so I think to just assume that they'll be able to accomplish what they did at Western – in year one, and maybe a stretch, but I think
he'd also built up a stable of receivers too.
Oh yeah, I mean they had NFL receivers out there, and so I think that 3 wins, just figuring out a way to get to it, it makes me want to take the over. But I think it'll be a tough road to get there.
I'm going over, and I think that the real over is going to be that Louisville Purdue opener. We're like, I feel like the final score there is like 56-28 or like something where like Louisville establishes a very fast 3-4 touchdown lead. And then
Purdue hits like 21 points in the fourth quarter.
Yes. Yeah. That's exactly the way I see this going down. I think it'll be awesome. Barton, you're awesome. Thanks so much for your time. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at Barton Simmons. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. We will link back up later this week so that we can talk about the Big Ten East. How far do we think the Ohio State Buckeyes can go, and can Penn State or anyone else knock them from a course towards returning to the college football playoff? I will get into all of that later. Thanks, Barton.
See you, bro.